Bouncing Death Kirk is a weekly Keyforge podcast focused on competitive play. The podcast is hosted by Kata Mode and Codameron. The show is here for listeners to gain a better understanding of how to evaluate decks, how to evaluate their own board position, and how to anticipate opponents' decisions. Without further ado, here's this week's episode.
Welcome to another episode of Bouncing Death Kirk. I am Kata Mode, and I'm here with Codameron.
How's it going?
And today we're going to be doing a Why to Play Keyforge 1 year later. It's a rehash of our very first episode, but this time we have a year to actually look at for knowledge.
So yeah, when we started this podcast, our first episode was Why Should You Play Keyforge? We talked about our own gaming backgrounds and what we were excited about from Keyforge. We talked about the unique deck building. Is that going to catch on? We talked a lot about speculation of what the secondary market was going to look like. We didn't really know. We talked a lot about what tournaments are going to look like, what communities there's going to be, and we expressed our interest in wanting to be part of those communities. And now it's a year later, and there's a lot of really good perspective. So timing-wise, it is mid-November 2019. Worlds Collide just dropped, and I think that Keyforge is in a really good place for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, so I think to what Kodama was just mentioning, speculation was a big point, right? When we first did this, it was all speculative, right? It was all just, we looked at the mechanics, we played a couple games, and we said, okay, what do we like versus not like about this game? And now we have a lot more knowledge on what Keyforge looks like both as a game and then also as a community. And so, like, I think the best thing that Keyforge is going for it is just its accessibility. It's so easy to jump into this game. It's only $10. You know, anyone can buy a deck. There's like vending machines that you saw at Gen Con. Like, it's just, also you can get it at like Barnes and Noble. I've seen like the decks available for sale there. And when you have that little friction to get into a game, it's very easy to convince, like, especially younger players to jump into this stuff.
Yeah, this game really gets me back into that addictive, you know, I want to buy a pack mentality. Mm-hmm. I'm at Target and I'll actually see a pack and I go, oh, I can just grab one, you know, with the rest of my stuff I'm buying. And a lot of people do that. One of the things I'm very excited about for Worlds Collide's release is they actually are, in addition to the two-player starter pack, they're releasing a one-player starter pack that gives you a deck with tokens. They're also releasing a fat pack. I think those will probably be available at more than just game stores. And these are things that I actually see people buying and getting them into this game. This game seems very accessible, not only initially because, you know, it's only one deck, just play a quick game, the rules aren't too hard, but also I think the distribution is getting a little bit better. And I think Keyforge is really hitting a decent stride.
Yeah, and on the accessibility front, I think one of the things that really helped Keyforge is the Crucible. Like being able to play online helps because sometimes you just can't go to a store. There are just a bunch of different things that happen with your life. Maybe your job just forces you to work overtime. So by the time you get off, you can't go to the store to play, but you're also just at home and you kind of want to play. So it's really valuable to say, okay, let me queue up a deck on the Crucible, play some games, and go that way. And like that going strong is a very important thing.
There's always a game on the Crucible. You can always find one, watch one, play all your weird decks that you're thinking about. And also, you can play decks that you're thinking about getting. You're thinking, play your friend's decks, play the champion decks, play some deck on eBay. All of these things really add to making me want to play more Keyforge and me convincing other people to also want to play Keyforge with me. Makes it very easy, and I think that it's shown to be really, really strong. There was a couple lulls in the Crucible, but it's open source now, and the people taking care of it, I can say with good authority that they're taking good care of it and implementing really good things into this game.
Yeah. Now let's also talk about the local metas. So a big selling point for me with Keyforge when this game first came out was I felt people would play it. So that's a big concern with other card games I play. A lot of the games I play are very difficult. And the problem with having obscenely difficult, like rules-wise games to play, is that people don't want to play them. Nobody wants to have to sit down for 40 minutes to read the rule book to be able to functionally play a game. People want to just say, give me the cards, we'll play it out, and I'll learn as I go. Some games that's impossible to do. Keyforge, you can kind of do that. And that's a big deal. Like it's a big deal that you can do that because it means that when you show up to your local store, the likelihood that you'll just have three players there is very low. Odds are you're going to have like a decent amount if it's just easier to get people into the game in the first place. And that was something that I felt KeyForge, when I first started, would have a very high chance of being able to do consistently, is just have a local meta.
And it does seem like these local metas are growing. I live in New York. I know it's a real thing for me to have a lot of people around. But, you know, I've played card games that don't grow. KeyForge is easy to get into, easy to show to other players. I mean, you even have this pickup line. It's like, hey, Magic players, Richard Garfield made this game too. And I've gotten at least one player interested because of that line in on its own. To compound on what Kermode said about the game being accessible, the game being easy to play, easy to pick up, it's easy to get people to play this game. And I know this isn't true for everyone. It's tricky to get people back to play anything for on a weekly basis. Mm-hmm. And this kind of shifts the conversation into talking about the weekly meta of what a KeyForge chainbound event looks like. And a year ago, we didn't know what that was going to be. It was just, hey, let's meet up and play KeyForge every Thursday because that's what we're doing at our store. Yeah. That was really on the onus of the game, of the store owner, of the whoever's running the game, whoever wants to get passionate about it. If you have a martyr for your game who wants to just make these tournaments and spend all their time on it, congratulations, you have a great person. Make sure that person sticks around. But FFG, they did something. They did chainbound events. And I know that Daniel and I have a little bit of a different opinions on this, but I'm really happy with chainbound events. I've found that people will come back and say, look, this is a deck that I want to get to power level 2. I'm on 4 chains. I'm going to get the 3 wins and get to power level 2. And they're excited when they do that. And it's a cool feeling. But, you know.
Yeah, I feel like chainbound, it helps certain type of players want to keep coming back. Because like that's the thing that you need to have in games, right? You need to have a reason to show up. So there's 2 reasons you could show up for a game, for a weekly game. Number one is you want to just try out a different deck, right? Like, so like in a typical like traditional card game, maybe you're just tinkering with a deck, right? So like you show up every week and you just make small modifications, trying to see what works, right? Or maybe you're trying to build a jank deck, right? So you can bring weird decks. And then the other way would be prizes. And so I feel like with Chainbound right now, I don't think does enough to satisfy the tinkerers of card games, right? Because like ultimately, if you bring your best deck, you're just playing it with a handicap over and over again. That's not enough incentive for certain players. And I think one of the things that FFG could do is they have a bunch of formats for this game, and they could push more of the formats. Because right now, if you go to a Chainbound event, it's either Sealed or Archon. And you can have other formats be part of this.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen that FFG does have other formats for their other events. There's lots of different Triad and Survival and Gauntlet formats. There's the really cool Vault Warrior one, which is over a couple days, you're bringing multiple different decks from different sets. That seems like a really cool thing. But really, for Chainbound, you're doing Archon Chainbound or Sealed Chainbound. There's no alternate formats. Like we've talked about doing the adaptive short format. When will KeyForge adopt that? Hopefully soon. I don't think FFG will ever actually adopt the anything where you're mixing up decks. Like I've seen formats where you take one house list from each of 3 decks and that's your deck. You may have that at your local local weekly thing, but it won't be in the gem computer. It won't be getting you any rewards. Maybe your tournament organizer will give you the whatever's in the play kit, but it's really on the game organizer of your store to make those wacky tournaments happen. Yeah. And sometimes they turn out well.
And I don't think it should be on them, because you think about your store organizer, they have to do a bunch of games, right? There's a very good chance that your store organizer just doesn't know how to play KeyForge at all. So if, like, let's say FFG, when you got your prize kit, it just said recommended structure. And it said week 1, Archon. Week 2, Sealed. Week 3, Adaptive. Week 4, Reversal. Right? If you did it that way, then all of a sudden, you don't need your store owner to come up with a bunch of different formats to keep things interesting and give people a reason to keep it playing. You could just read the notebook, right? But what I've noticed is, like, specifically at one of the stores here, like the FFG Game Center, that's a store that consistently has players because it's FFG headquarters, right? People just show up there to game anyways. So they're never lacking for players, But what I've noticed is that the people that run the tournaments are typically just like random employees that don't know how to play KeyForge. And that's a problem, right? Because for them, it's like they just look at the sheet that says it's either Archon or Seal today. And they don't know to really pimp out the different formats and make it interesting for players.
And this is a weekly thing. So that's mm-hmm. really important for building a community. And mm-hmm. and having said that, I still think that KeyForge grows a community rather well compared to other games. But what's interesting to me is that on the medium and large scale tournaments, I think FFG is doing a very good job. I think KeyForge is growing very well. There's a lot of different Vault Tours with very different formats. Mm-hmm. There's all the Prime Championships, and they give you an option, like four different options. And then there's the Vault Warrior series, which is another set of different options. It's a little hard to keep track of, but that's just FFG. But there is stuff to keep a medium to high competitive level player interested throughout the course of a couple months, a year, this past year of playing KeyForge. There's a lot of things to do. There's a lot of tournaments to go to. And there are pretty cool prizes to win once you get past that weekly bar.
Yeah, and I do think with regards to tournaments, so the Yeti change is very positive from Cascade. If there is something that I think will really help the game a lot, it's going to be once this Vault Warrior happens. I don't think Vault Warrior is going to matter too much from a competitive angle. I do think it'll matter from a casual angle, because when players get into games, they want to see high-level play, right? They want to see, okay, what are the top dogs in this game doing? And if you can show video, that helps a lot. And the better the quality of the video is, the more that the game looks like it matters. So what you want to have is you want to have a stream that has big FFG logos all over it, that is high quality, and that clearly establishes what these players are as far as community goes. And right now we haven't had that. Right now it's been like players themselves might come up and set up a stream, and that's nice, but like really, like FFG needs to go a little bit further on that, because that's going to help the game skyrocket.
On the note of communities, I think that the communities have been growing pretty nicely in the KeyForge mm-hmm. zone. Team SAS, Team Reapout, Bouncing Death Quark, mm-hmm. obviously. And I think that there's the Wookiee. There's a lot of people online trying to make content for this game, Cardboard Box Games. There's a lot of ways to be in touch with the KeyForge community, either on a regular basis or at these events. It's great to see on the finals table, it's a Team Reapout versus a Team SAS. Yeah. And that is what we're looking to happen. We want to have happen in these Vault Warrior tournaments. We want to have more people streaming. And honestly, FFG's stream for Gen Con was really nice outside of their commentators. I wish they had had a commentator that I approve of myself. But besides that, their quality was great. And the games were pretty good. And, you know, even you and I went back and watched that and commentated over that mm-hmm. finals game. And it was a great game. There were a lot of interesting choices. And I think as far as that goes, competitive-wise, there is a world for KeyForge to grow and really come into its own with this third set coming out and a lot of interesting options and strategies to play, and a lot of good players too.
Yeah, the content matters here too. So when we first did this episode a year ago, we didn't know how much content there would be. And that's an important thing for games, because like when I jump into a game, it's important for me to have some sort of bearing, like, okay, what forums do I need to go on to? What do I need to listen to? What YouTube channel do I need to watch? And right now, like specifically our show, Bouncing Death Quark, is a really good place to point. So if somebody's new, you can always point them to us. And then there's a couple other shows too that you can point them to.
And I really appreciate a lot of people I see on Reddit actually pointing people to us. When people say, hey, there's every now and then, maybe every month or so, there is a, hey, what podcast do I listen to get better at this game? And Sanctimonious is up there. We're up there. There's a lot of actually really good resources, and I think we're one of them.
Yeah, and something that I've tried to point out to people is that people, when they play games, rarely play a game because of the game. So here's an example. My girlfriend, she loves the My Little Pony card game, right? And so we have a friend who he plays like every game, right? And so she wants to show him this game, and he's just like, I'm not gonna play because it's My Little Ponies, like just flat out. And she's like, why is he gonna discriminate a game just because it's My Little Ponies? Because it's actually a pretty in-depth game. And what I told her is, I'm like, people don't play games because of that. Like people don't play games because they're good mechanically. People play games because they like the theme of the game, they like the community of the game. It's easy to get into. There's people to play against. It's like all the the price. It's like all the other stuff that's not the mechanical nature of the game is why they play. Like if myself and Kodama were only playing games based off of mechanics, we would never stop playing Star Wars. Right? We play other games because they offer other elements to it. And that's something to point out about KeyForge, which is that when you have this game and you have a community and the game is cheap and you have content and like you have all these different resources, it makes it more encouraging to want to play a game. Whereas if you wanted to play Ashes has a lot of nice things to it. I don't know any Ashes players. I would have no idea where the forums are. I don't know what video content to go to. Like you'd just be lost in the woods.
I wouldn't be able to go to my local store and play that. I'm not even sure if they stock it, or if they do, it's got dust in the box in the back, mm-hmm. right? But KeyForge, you know, these decks are moving. These decks are, you know, the new ones just came out, and FFG is promoting this game. It is, I can see it in the stores. I can see it in people's hands. I can see, I hear about a lot of tournaments around the country, people running them at conventions, people running them weekly. And I think KeyForge is a healthy game, and it's going to grow. And I think in the future, there's a lot of things to look forward to. There's a couple things that we're waiting to hear about, but, you know, it's only been a year, right? A lot of games didn't get – I don't think a lot of games have had as much success as KeyForge has had in their first year. I think KeyForge is doing very well for that metric.
Yeah, and something that I think could still use work on. So when we made this episode, there was speculation on how much would it cost to play this game. Right, like if I like this game and I think it's fun, and I want to take it to the next step, I want to be competitive, am I going to have to spend hundreds of dollars on a deck? The answer has been no, you don't. It's just too easy to find decks on the secondary market that are very good at very reasonable prices. However, the idea that it could cost a lot of money still permeates through a lot of the community, right? And that's something that I think could still do a little bit better job of like selling that.
That's one of the things that we tried to do. We tried to show people that, hey, you can look at a deck, see it online for $40, realize that there's hidden potential here, and get it. And you figure out that there are more combos in this deck than you expected, and you actually got a really good deck, and you take it to a vault tour, or maybe just a prime championship, does really well. We think that there's a lot of room for that, and just because there are decks that sell for $200, $500, I've heard decks sell for four-figure. That's mm-hmm. ridiculous. I think getting decks for $40-$60, I mean, that's better than a six packs that I would buy, right? That's a very reasonable thing to do in this game. Not cheap, but this is talking about like, okay, I've looked at a deck. I played it on the Crucible. I've tested it. I think it's good. It does the things I want it to do. I listened to Bouncing Death Quark. I know how to analyze a deck as far as if I want to play it for a tournament. I'm going to pull the trigger. There goes $60. Now I've got a deck that I'm bringing to the next Vault Tour.
But like the hysteria hasn't ended. Right, and that's like it's better now than it was a year ago, but there are still a lot of people that fear of the price of playing KeyForge, and this is something that as a community we still need to do a little bit better job, because like that should be the selling point. The selling point should be, look, this game costs nothing to get into. It's $10. You have a deck, right? And then if you want to take it to the next step, the price of going from like random deck I buy off the shelf to like deck I could take to a vault tour is really not that much money. It's a very low price. And that should be part of the selling point that we should, as a community, make to people, that you can jump into this game as hard or as soft as you want to at a very reasonable price.
Remember, $50 sounds like a lot, but 5 packs doesn't. And for that matter, 10 packs of Magic cards doesn't. $50 gets you a 3X or a 4X in your Magic deck, right?
Yeah.
In $50 in a card game sense isn't a ton of money. And that's what, you know, it's important to remember that this, as far as card game goes, it's really not that expensive.
Yeah, and that would be that's part of like the refined sales pitch that we still need to work on, but it's there, right? Like I speculated that it would not cost that much money to get into this game, but I wasn't sure, right? Now I'm pretty sure. Like you don't need a lot of money, and that could change, right? Maybe in future sets, all of the powerful cards are exclusively rares. But for the most part, the company's done a pretty decent job of making sure that the power cards are by and large commons and uncommons. So you don't need to have like super rare cards for a deck to be viable. You just need to have the right combination of commons and uncommons for a deck to be viable, which is much easier to acquire.
And for what it's worth, within the first month of a set coming out is always when the prices fluctuate the most, right? Mm-hmm. This is, you know, Worlds Collide just came out, and no one knows what's good yet. So people are buying up these decks and those decks, and no one knows the big combos, no one knows the counters, no one has any tournament results to go by. And it's a very unique marketplace that is... it's not like a Magic marketplace. It's not like you're buying a card and then it can be used equitably elsewhere. These decks are really their own thing. And there's a lot of opportunity to find a steal or to get ripped off if you're not careful. That's why I'm super happy about the Crucible. And we've talked a lot about, you know, if you're thinking about buying a deck, play it on the Crucible, test it out, and see if you like it. And all of these things really come to a world where we have a really healthy secondary market for Keyforge. And it gives the game a lot of room to grow.
Yeah, and last point here. So a reason to play any game is prizes, whether it's because you want the prizes or you want to resell the prizes in the secondary market. It is important for players to show up every week and have prizes. And the prizes for the first year were abysmally bad. I didn't think they'd be that bad, and they were. But luckily, the FFG has shown some direction in that the prizes are not going to be as horrid. They're still not great. Like, the prizes they've shown so far are not impressive, but it's not laughably bad. And as long as they keep going in an upward trajectory, you could see that really rise up too.
We're starting to get better mats. We're starting to get a couple tokens that I appreciate. We're starting to get there's the decks that have the alternate art cards. Those could be kind of cool. And then we've seen like the higher tier prizes at the Vault Tours. You have the amber shards that you've been working for. You get cool prizes from the wall. You get to pick them. There's the winning decks from Grand Championships. They have cool backs and they say a Grand Champion on them. There's Vault Warrior, which is cold hard cash. It's not a lot when you compare it to like other card games or even poker for that matter, but it's a really big step for Keyforge's first year. Also, outside of prizes, there's GameGenic, which they partnered with. They have a lot of really cool sleeves that say Keyforge. The boxes are very high quality. The dials are great. There's stickers, which I've been wanting from the first day. Keyforge is growing. It's going to get better. The prizes are going to improve. And after a little bit of a rough first year, there's a lot of promise on the horizon.
Yeah, and that's part of the sales pitch too. You want to make sure that when you're selling someone on a game, you never want to sell someone on a dying game. You want to sell people on a game that has a future. And so when you see that like Keyforge is actually making real prizes now, and when you see that like they're still selling a bunch of units, and that they're making new sets, and that they have all these cool things coming on the horizon, they have the big tournaments, all that stuff, that is something that you can sell to people. That is something that you can say, okay, you should play this game because look at this cool thing that's happening, right? Check out this Vault Warrior Finals video, right? And when you give people that, like, especially you think about, like, teenagers. Like, teenagers watch YouTube. There needs to be stuff on YouTube for them to watch. And that's where these big tournaments is a really big thing for them to get them interested in the game in the first place and then start playing more often. So, yeah, that wraps up our episode of, like, why you should play Keyforge 1 year later, you know, and what things have changed in that year. If you want to show someone the show, you can... show them either one of our social medias, Facebook or Twitter. We are at Deathcork for either one of them. Through there, you can enter our Discord link. And in our Discord, that's the easiest way to contact myself or Codameron or contact anyone else within the community. If you want to fly our colors, we have an online store, so you can buy merch for that. So tell your friends about the show, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks a bunch.